Hey everybody, this is Karen Allen from Trinity Health Hub. Eugenie has asked me to share one of our webinars for you to enjoy during this holiday season. Our hub specializes in continuing education and community connection all around the globe. If you'd like to find out more about what we do or the content that you can stream on demand, visit our website, trinityhealthhub.com. We look forward to seeing you online.
All right. We are back for another session of Roger and Nancy's book club. And we actually have something amazing that's going to happen today that Roger and I have just been talking about, where he's going to share a little bit about a project that he's been working on. And Nancy is going to come in and join us later, but we're going to start with a dive into Belladonna. So Roger, tag you're it.
Thank you. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about this project first before I start to tell you about Belladonna, but I'm not going to bore you with it too much. I'm just going to say that through the foresight of Nancy over the past 40 years, Nancy and I have been collecting every case of every remedy that we hear about, see in a journal, attend to, the 1,000 seminars that we've been to over these past 40 years, and our own cases and our students' cases and our colleagues' cases and e-journal cases and every written journal case that's in English that we've been able to keep our hands on, and books of cases and just pretty much all cases. We are cases all the time here. So we've collected those through the years. And as I was going back with the initial idea of simply updating the desktop guide, which Karen was holding
my
up.
My very old, beat up.
Yeah, that's a first edition, actually.
That's right.
I can tell from the cover.
Yeah.
So, we're well past the 40th printing of desktop guide now. So. You have an original.
Yep.
It'll probably be worth almost what you paid for it someday. So anyhow, as I was doing this work of updating the desktop guide, I started using more and more of this huge case stash that we had in the rewriting. And after I had spent maybe 3 or 4 years doing that, I realized that what I really wanted to do was change the whole project into an only cured case textbook, which I call Clinically Verified Materia Medica, CVMM. So that's which I believe is going to kind of take the place of desktop guide, or at least maybe for those who want to delve a little bit deeper into materia medica. And what I found by studying tons of cases, well, I'm going to show you this in Belladonna, since we're working on the acute miasm. I chose Belladonna since it was one of the larger acute remedies. And I've done this same thing, which I'm about to show you. In fact, I'm going to take this camera and I'm going to show you my files. So let's see. I don't know if you can see. Can
yep.
you see this?
We got it. Yep.
Okay.
Your
this
folder?
Is my Belladonna file. And I'm going to show you what I've got here. So in Belladonna, I was able to find about 45 full cases, another 20 or so case reports, which I'll explain the difference, then a bunch of modern acute cases, and then, of course, about 100 old cases, historic cases of this. I'm just going to show you. So here's a journal case from one of my favorites, Annette Smiglicht. Here's a case of Nancy's. Another case of Nancy's. Here's a case of mine. Here's a case from J.S. Here's another case of Nancy's and another case of Nancy's. Here's a case from, I think this is Lynx from
Resonance. Oh, or from the Nash Journal.
Is this the Nash Journal? Okay.
That's what the heading looks like.
Here's a case from one of our students. Here's another case of Nancy's. Here's another case of Annette's. And here's a case from Dr. David Curtin, who passed away about a decade ago, sorely missed, wonderful guy. Another case from a journal. Here's another case. This is a case of, I'm not sure where that one was from. Another of my cases. Here's Heinrich Frey's case. Here's another one of my cases. Here's a case from, this is the American Journal of Homeopathy. So I'm just showing you just sort of the variety of cases. Mm-hmm. Obviously, here's another couple cases of mine that are in here. Here's a case of mine from Greece. And another case
long ago.
Nancy's, a case from Andrea Sullivan. So this is just sort of the variety of cases. And it's not to have cases from just myself. This is to try and get as broad a viewpoint of cases as possible. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I do is I collect the cases. Mm-hmm. The second thing I do is I put them in order, starting with children, the youngest. So by age, I put them in order. Mm-hmm. Because there's also a lot of differences between how children present, how adolescents present, and so forth. Uh-huh. So I put them by age. The other reason I put them by age is it's just a simple way. Everybody puts the age of their case at the beginning of the case 90% of the time. So that way, if I find the same case written in two different journals, I catch it right away as opposed to, you know, counting the symptoms twice or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's a good way of just making sure that you're not double counting cases and so forth, or building up a viewpoint of the remedy based on the same case more than one time. It's easy to happen. In historic cases, that happens all the time. In the old journals, they pass cases around. So you can easily find the same case in five or six different journals.
And, echo chamber.
Yeah, yeah. So the second thing I do after once I get the cases and I order them, then I highlight the cases. So as you can see here, I think you can see here, you'll see pink, green, and yellow. The pink is mental symptoms, the green are physical symptoms, and the yellow are general symptoms. So I do that for every case. And you can see how they're highlighted. So here's the foods, it's cravings for that one and so forth. And then, so here's the food cravings in this case, and so forth and so on. So so once I've done that, then I start collating the symptoms. So here's the collation, and I'm not sure, can you see that well? So you can see here's the physical symptoms. So then I put behavior disobedience. All these are the cases where there was behavioral disorder and disobedience in belladonna. Mm-hmm. And here's the word rebellious. Here's restlessness in kids. Here's general restlessness. Kids that act like they're clowns, or patients that act like they're clowns. Cursing. Patients that ran away, have the tendency to run away. Temper issues. Kicking, biting, spitting, each case where that behavior pattern was seen, striking. Then I can go back and I can look at each one of those cases that have each one of those symptoms as I'm trying to define more particularly what they were doing and how that symptom related to other symptoms. So I'm taking all those things down, biting nails. So biting nails, which belladonna is not known for, but you can see came up in six cases and so forth. So these are all the mental symptoms, all the fears that came up in belladonna. These are the what I call fascinations, habits, hobbies, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the delusions that came up in cases, which cases it came up, all the dreams that came up, ailments from that came up. So I go through all of the mentals, and then I do the generals the same mm-hmm. way. You mm-hmm. know, whether they were warm or chilly, you know, the famous aggravation at 3 p.m. for belladonna, how many right. times does it really come up? The head sweats and so forth. So we're going through then the food cravings. So here's cravings, aversions, and aggravations. These are all the foods that came up and were, you know, had strong characteristics in relationship to the foods. Sleep patterns, physical conditions, throat, nose, mouth, all the remedies that had these, the symptoms. So epistaxis came up, you know,
mm-hmm.
as expected, fairly often. Red face, let's see. Yeah. Red face, obviously, is going to mm-hmm. come up a lot in belladonna, so you can see how many times. So that's sort of the second process. And then the next thing is you know, the writing, trying to take the symptoms that they were there and see how to put them in context and write about it. And it printed up just the belladonna. Let me just double print it because I remember now that I gave that copy to Nancy to look at it. She's not here. Okay, let me just print that thing up again.
I'm just struck by the huge amount of work. I mean, it's like you're a human computer database extractor.
Yeah, kind of. That's right. And that's part of it. And then there's another part, which is just you imbue yourself so deeply with the cases as you're doing that work, that the idea is then you get the feeling for all the various aspects of belladonna, mm-hmm. or every case. And then what I find is that I have to, like a large remedy, like belladonna is a pretty sizable remedy, I have to spend, like, I can't separate the days. As I go through the cases for the sort of the deep review of the remedy, I have to do it all at once. So it may take me 2 days to read and basically memorize the characteristics of each one of these, say, I think it was 48 finally, chronic cases, modern chronic cases that I had. So I have to read through them and just get them completely inside the fabric of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start writing, and then I can put everything into a context and write it clearly what I found and what I felt. What I discovered is if I do it on Monday, and then I don't finish it until Friday, I can't do that. I have to do it all at once. So I may spend, you know, like Friday from 6 a.m. till midnight doing nothing but reading the, you know, the cases. And I'll read them over and over again, obviously, in order to extract. Because some things are said one way in one case and said the exact same thing said in a completely different way in another case. So you have to see what the similarity is, even if the words are different. So mm-hmm. it can't just be a straight extraction of words or symptoms. You have to see what's behind the words in order to do it, you know, effectively. So that's a problem. Then I'll write that. And then, of course, extracting the physical symptoms is the simplest part, or mm-hmm. the general symptoms, because those are pretty clear. Either they're warm-blooded or they're chilly, or they're both warm-blooded and chilly, or what are they? You know, so that is pretty much just a computer analysis that you can do. You know,
Put you into the state? Do you develop symptoms?
I develop symptoms, and not only that, every time I'm doing this, when I get deep into it, I become convinced that that's my remedy that I've been looking for, you know, for 40 years. And the homeopath, every homeopath has an eternal hunt for their right remedy. And
so, yep.
You'll actually start dreaming, dreams that relate to the remedy and things like that. So it's like doing a proving, but you're doing a proving for
the cases.
A 50 patient group.
Yeah.
And then the old cases, of course, have, you know, so you have to see. But the fascinating thing was how much of the known materia medica is wrong or incomplete.
Misconceived.
How many times in the cases you see a different story than what's in every textbook, because our textbooks, just like I was starting to do with the rewrite of Desktop Guide, are what you say. They're an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. Somebody writes something and somebody else, you know, when they write their materia medica, they just plop that characteristic in. And so the more times it's written, of course, then the more certain we are that it's the truth. And then eventually we develop this image of a remedy that's in many ways erroneous, many ways incomplete, many ways hard to understand, and frankly, in many ways, completely wrong in a lot of remedies.
And we can't really challenge that until we have 40 years of experience.
Even with 40 years of experience, because what when you analyze a case, you only act on what you already know. And for example, many times prescribers, authors, will write out a case and they'll only put in the symptoms when they write out the case that they used in order to come to the remedy. They won't put in a lot of extraneous data. So therefore, symptoms that they didn't use, in other words, they saw a craving in belladonna, you know, which everybody knows belladonna craves lemons and lemonade. So if you see craves lemons and lemonade, you put that in. But maybe in the case there was a craving for fish, which turned out to be the number one craving for belladonna, which you didn't think belladonna is not listed for fish. Therefore, that just happened to be an irrelevant fact. You may not even put it in your case. You may only put in that they crave lemonade.
Yeah, so we filter what we publish. Filter.
And so then we end up limiting our view.
Hello, Nancy.
Yeah. So anyway, with that in mind, I want to just tell you what I discovered about belladonna, including, can you pull up a chair?
No.
Hold on.
So guys, this is fun. This is very hot off the press information.
Yes, it is.
It's not even off the press yet.
It's really hot off the press. Yes.
Not in the pot.
Not on the press.
It's not even on the press, right?
All right. So here we both are.
Welcome, Nancy.
I'm not going to read this word for word, but I'm just going to sort of summarize for you what I wrote, because the whole thing goes on for 13 pages, and we're not going to go through all of that. So, especially the details, which are important when you're analyzing a case, but today I'm just going to try and give you a feel for what, I mean, you'll see the belladonna that you know, but you also see something else with that in the background. So the main impression of the belladonna cases by far and away is that there's like a force inside, a tremendous force inside. And the poor patient is a victim of this force rather than the perpetrator of the force. That's the way it feels when you're taking the case. So that force can be reflected in the physical symptoms, like, you know, the amazing fevers of belladonna, where you go to touch their forehead and your initial impression is almost that your hand got scalded. I hope Nancy will add in things like that. Or the flushing, which is the most violent flushing that we have in basically the entire materia medica. Or the headaches, where if you've ever seen a belladonna patient with headaches, you know, it's not just a headache. It's like a headache becomes their entire existence for the time of the headache. It's so violent. And in fact, violent is the most common word used to describe both the patient himself, the patient's mental state, and the physical symptoms. Wow. You know, if you look through the cases and you just extract what's the number one word used to describe violent, was the word that came up the most frequently.
Wow.
So it's so intimidating. Belladonna cases can be so intimidating, both the internal violence, the fear states, the excitation inside the patient. You almost want to take a step back when you're around these patients. That's your first reaction a lot of times. Belladonna, many prescribers, many authors have written that belladonna doesn't have a lot of fears, that it's kind of a straightforward, charming patient without very many fears. This is completely wrong. Most belladonna patients have strong fears, but those fears vanish, as we're going to talk about, in the adults. They start to decline in the adult years. As the brain, the belladonna patients are almost primitive, almost instinctive. There's so much like, I don't want to say reptilian brain, but something like that. Mm-hmm. The raw, unprocessed nature of the you know, our most inner dreams and fears and whatever are found in belladonna stronger than almost anywhere. Stramonium, which is so close to belladonna, it's the same plant family, of course. Mm-hmm. It's belladonna is the deadly nightshade. So also stramonium is also a nightshade, hyoscyamus, tabacum, dulcamara. These are all remedies in the nightshade family, capsicum. So all of the remedies in this family, the nervous system is unlocked. The primitive centers of the brain become unlocked, and they come through where nightmares belong in your sleep. Belladonna, the nightmares and dreams bleed into their daily life. And of course, it's related to all sorts of neurological conditions, convulsions, and so forth. And all of these things are present in such energy and such violence, and sometimes with pure terror. What's the most common, I'm just going to give you the general characteristics of the personality type. The most common feature of belladonna was anger across the board. Out of these 48 cases, 25 of them, fully 25 of them, had severe and almost uncontrollable anger. Wow. So that's a huge percentage. Over half of the cases complained of that. And also in some of the case reports, it was the same story. About half of the cases had severe anger. In 18 of those cases, out of those 25, the anger became physical, physically violent, with all sorts of things. You know, the striking was the most common. 6 cases were striking, 5 cases were biting, 4 cases were throwing things. Belladonna's not listed for throwing things. Breaking objects, spitting was only in 3 cases, although it's emphasized very strongly in the Materia Medica, kicking, pulling people's hair, another 3 cases. And 4 cases were threatening violence, even if they didn't do it. They were threatening, you know, I'm going to kill you, that kind of thing. So violence and anger were very strong. What's equally troubling is how often the violence is directed towards the patient himself.
Oh. Yeah.
So head banging, very prominent in this remedy. Or slapping his own face or his own head. Self-cutting and self-burning, self-biting. All of these were symptoms that came up in, about 10 cases had self-harm as a very strong characteristic. Hmm. And what was interesting is that it never went both ways. The violence went either outward or inward, but never towards both.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was an interesting thing to find. Also, what was rare was that if patients had violent tendencies, they almost never had violent physical symptoms.
Oh, wow. They expressed it.
It was either expressed through their physical body or is expressed through their behavior or their language. The only time that wasn't true was in acutes, where in delirious states, people could have violent headaches, violent fever, and at the same time have physical violence and so forth. Second characteristic is restlessness and wildness. You know, we think of belladonna as an agitated remedy. I think most of us have that thought. But I don't think it's well known for the pure restlessness of this remedy. And it is as restless as torrential.
Wow.
It's amazingly restless, hardly able to sit still in many cases. 13 cases, restlessness was the most prominent symptom in the case.
Wow.
Yeah. And in many times we see and that happens both, I'm just talking about from an emotional cause that you have restlessness, but in the physical symptoms, restlessness is also there. Like headaches are so severe that the patient is thrashing in bed, hard to sit still, that kind of thing. Or fevers and so forth. And in many cases, the term wild has been used to describe this aspect of belladonna cases. In a lot of the cases, the prescribers put down wild, or the parents, or the wife or husband used the word wild to describe the patient, but not one of the cases said that of themselves. So it's a physical observation that they're wild, or an inner observation, but not something the patient is likely to say. And none of the patients complained of restlessness, and yet they could be seen just literally like moving around like a mad person without ever mentioning restlessness as a characteristic. So it's not something that they say, but it's something you have to observe. Next characteristic is screaming. Belladonna is number one screamingest remedy in our Materia Medica. 15 of the cases were shrieking just due to mental causes, but many, many other cases due to physical symptoms, like the headache, where you actually shriek or call out because the pain is so severe, or the arthritis, or whatever the physical pain is. It's so severe as to force you to vocalize. And that's the same with their inner state. Sometimes they just can't help themselves. They just shriek right in the middle of the interview. So it's a shrieking remedy. And then escape and hiding. You know, belladonna, they literally, the patients will just get up and run. I mean, it's like, they're not like, oh, I'm going to run away from home and sneak out of the house. It's not like that. It's like they've had enough and they're just gone. They just take off and go. They bolt. That's the exact word. And the patient, like we talked about, these sort of primitive centers of the brain are very strong. there is tremendous suspicion in belladonna. So when they enter a room, when they sit down with you, part of their mind is assessing you. Are you a threat? That's what that's their first thought. Anytime they're meeting somebody, is this a threat? Am I going to have to fight and perhaps kill this person in front of me? Or am I going to have to run away? Or can I hide from them? And so these are very strong facts. They also hide
through in all the acute miasm. You know, if you look at what you had written about the acute miasm, these are big things, this thing of threat. Of everybody, I'm looking. Are you going to, you know, you had the case in the book of the little boy where he thought everything was going to kill him.
That's right.
Yeah. So this, there's this acuteness in the state that's huge.
It's a state which is both, it's an amalgamation of the nightshade, you know, like unlocking of the primitive fears and the acute miasm together, and that's what makes it so strong. Only thing that rivals it is stramonium in that regard. You know, the fear of threat and the fear of people around them. And they also hide, especially as they mature, and I'm going to go through this because it's a very important thing. There are three distinct stages of life in belladonna, and the stages change as the brain matures. And once they reach, you know, steady adulthood, which comes a little bit later in belladonna than in most other remedies, once they reach that state, they're much more compensated. And you don't see a lot of these features. But they still continue to escape or hide. But a lot of times it'll be behind constant smiling. Like a patient that comes in and is always smiling, you have to think about belladonna. It's one of the really strong remedies for that characteristic, smiling or clowning. As I showed you there were four cases that said, oh, I'm the class clown, or I'm always telling jokes to get people going. And joke telling is a big characteristic in belladonna, and it's a way of hiding the inner violence behind, you know, a smile and a joke and so forth. It helps to keep back. They're sort of hiding from that itself, from that violence or that fear. And fear then is the next.
I have to add that when you see the smile, it looks inauthentic.
Oh, really?
You can't tell, you can't see that there's hiding something, but you just don't feel it's authentic because it's so constant.
It can be while they're talking about painful subjects.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of gallows humor sometimes as well in belladonna.
Well, Ananda Zarin used to talk about the mask.
Yeah. This is
so they've got the smile mask.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. And then fear, you know, a lot of times certain cases of belladonna are counterphobic. And that's why this whole thing about fearlessness has come into play. That's why it came up in a lot of texts, and that's why a lot of authors have written about it that way. But at the core, belladonna patients are always expecting an attack. That's kind of their baseline. Now they manage that in different ways, but that attack can be right up to murder. They can expect that. The feeling is that you could literally turn into a monster before their eyes and jump over your desk and, you know, start sucking blood out of their neck.
Yeah.
That's the way they feel it. They won't say that. But fear of being alone is very strong in belladonna. It's not listed strongly for that. A lot of times they'll be clinging to their mother and father. They'll have to go into the parents' bed at night, where we would routinely be prescribing stramonium for such symptoms. But belladonna has that. Violent animals, there's a strong fear in belladonna, especially dogs, and especially black dogs. You'll hear them say that exactly. And but also violent people, criminals, police, soldiers, anybody who lives with violence for a living, like a policeman, scares the bejesus out of many belladonna patients. It's as if they were living in a war zone. You could think of it that way. Constant vigilance. Night terrors were strong. There was eight of the cases came in primarily for night terrors. Six of the cases were totally counterphobic. And family members would say they're tough and they like to cultivate toughness. Mm. Belladonna, you'll see belladonna cases who were ex-military or ex-police. You know, that's the counterphobic side of the fears. Now, they may have counterphobic behavior and still are aware of fears in themselves, but sometimes it becomes so strong they can't even admit to themselves that they feel fears, but it'll come up in their dreams or other places. Another surprising thing I learned about belladonna is just how strongly they're affected in relationship. Disappointed love is a tremendous aggravation in belladonna. And if you'll see this in certain rubrics, like suicidal from disappointed love, belladonna, I think, is maybe the only remedy.
Well, a violent reaction.
A violent reaction to this. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's so hard for them to trust. When they do trust somebody, then it's such a big thing for them that, you know, it's like that person is not going to be easily replaced. If you really trust somebody and then they leave you, how are you going to replace it? It's going to take a lot to replace that. So they're very disrupted by loss of love relationship. So it's, it can be as strong. You know, you're prescribing Ignatia, and what you actually need is belladonna. And the difference is Ignatia has hysterical reactions. Belladonna has violent reactions.
Wow. And so we could see this in a child, say, after a divorce where a parent moves away.
Absolutely.
Or after a nanny leaves, or after some kind of scenario where a beloved.
Whatever the trusted person is. And once they trust, they're extremely loyal. Belladonna is very, very loyal to the people that they trust, because that becomes their world. Mm-hmm. Their world is everybody else outside and the people that I trust here. You know, so anybody you don't trust, by definition, could be a murderer in disguise. It's kind of that feeling.
Kind of black and white.
It's black and white, which is nightshade.
And
night,
red.
Night and light and dark, you know. Yeah. Solanaceae, it's sun. Sun and inky black night. Okay, so I alluded to this. There were 13 children cases here. And nine of them were brought in for behavior disorders.
So really?
Yeah.
Because we think of this as the big category in belladonna children, behavior issues.
Yeah, that is the big category. Yeah. 9 out of 13 were brought in specifically for behavior disorders. Hmm. Yeah. And the behavior disorder, the children are extremely restless, tearing up your office. I mean, you think it's got to be tarantula when you read it.
Or tuberculinum, or yeah.
Tuberculinum, something like that. But no, it's belladonna is as restless as any other remedy. The parents describe constant movement, disobedience, tantrums, violent episodes, very common, kicking, biting, spitting, that kind of thing. These children are very prone to running away. Mm. And they need a lot of attention, a lot of physical closeness, touch, reassurance, safety. They cling to their mother, very strong. So that would be
a differentiation
children.
With tarantula, where the kids aren't clinging.
Right. They're not connected. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So that's the children group. Then we have the teenage group, and I found 8 cases of teenagers, meaning 13 through about 17, 18, sometimes a little bit older. And here the main characteristic, the main number of remedies were borderline personality.
Wow.
Yeah, that was five of the eight cases were borderline in belladonna teenage.
Which has that trust issue, black and white thing. I love you. Yeah. You're wonderful. Oh my God, you're a threat.
Yeah.
Which is one of the hardest conditions to treat.
Yeah. But these were five borderline cases that were completely cured by belladonna. Yeah, completely cured. And here's the characteristics here. They're subject to very bad mood swings, very fearful, agitated more than restless, and volatile. They're kind of emotional wrecks. There were threats of suicide. Impulsivity was very strong and very characteristically self-harming. Mm. The largest number of the self-harmers that I described were in this teenage group. In several, physical or sexual abuse was behind the breakdown of the personality. And yet what was very interesting was that in these cases, they never told their parents about the abuse. And mostly the parents were not the abusers. It was a cousin or an uncle or something like that. I think in one of the cases it had been the father, one or two of the cases. And they didn't tell their parents about it at all until like they were in their 40s. They mentioned it for the first time to their parents. You know, Uncle Bob, he was sexually abusing me. You know, that kind of thing. They just hid it. And when you ask them, why didn't you tell your dad? They go, I don't know. They just literally don't know. They're like, stunned. Why didn't I tell my dad? You know, that's kind of the thing. But there's some instinctive thing that they have to handle it themselves. I don't know why. Hmm. And now in this group of kids, especially kids, there was one adult that had this same pattern. They were agitated and stirred up and caused a lot of problems, but only after some sort of severe grief, that's when the breakdown into the borderline state occurred. And usually it was from a grief or a romantic disappointment, some acute jealousy that came up, or some other form of loss.
Where we might be thinking of something like hyoscyamus.
Very easily. Mm-hmm. You could confuse this remedy with hyoscyamus. Sexual displays were almost completely absent in belladonna.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah. So in the adults, overwhelmingly, the cases, 21 of the cases out of 28 cases presented with physical problems by adulthood. Only 7 of the cases showed up with mental issues.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just like the brain totally matured by the time they reached matured and basically suppressed the symptoms mm-hmm. into the physical form.
Yeah, people get to that point where they say things like, I've learned to live with my demons.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Now, 7 of the cases did still have mental symptoms and panic disorders, and dementia and psychosis, you know, schizophrenics mm-hmm. became chronic. So their state persisted from childhood into this, in the mental sphere. But otherwise, mostly they came in for.
So not coming in like, you know, given the violence, these were not folks who were coming in with domestic violence issues.
No, very rare that they had, that there was any problem, because they bond so deeply with their partners and they're actually very protective of their
partners. They can't risk that.
It's not that they would never raise their hand in anger or something like that. They could. But generally the partners were not afraid of them and felt sympathetic for them if they lost their temper too far and broke something or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That wasn't a big thing. But of course, the ones with mental problems usually were not in a relationship by that age in life. They were usually institutionalized or what have you, you know. So, and when there were severe mental symptoms in the adults, they were usually related to hormones, especially in women at menopause or before mm-hmm. their periods or from pregnancy, that kind of thing. And then, of course, I'm not going to spend much time on this. The other thing is that belladonna is used very frequently for acute disorders, you know, irrespective of whether or not they were constitutional belladonnas, whether they were or not, high fevers and that kind of thing were very, very common. So then I got in here a heading which I call presentations. I just want to run through that because these are very telling. So I try to put in presentations is how they come into the office. That's what I'm talking about here. Mm-hmm. So there's one group of patients that come in sort of vital, cheerful, usually stocky, with very strong physical symptoms. Bless you. The patient is likely to be smiling, jesting, very friendly, and seems impervious to worry or illness until it suddenly strikes them, you know, whatever their illness is. I talked about that one patient that came into my office last time with a belladonna that was actually acute peritonitis from a cancer, a colon cancer that had ruptured. And he was exactly this sort. He was a cheerful, big man, extreme vitality, still going in his 90s, ex-World War II pilot, do anything for anybody, you know, give the shirt off his back, that kind of a person, and jesting, stupid jokes, just, I mean, enough to drive you crazy. So. Then the next presentation is agitated and fearful patients, paranoid, expecting attack or catastrophe. They can't explain why. This group was physically restless, nearly uncontainable a lot of the time, and on the edge of either escape or violence, as if they could literally run out of your office. And I have had belladonna patients literally run out of the office in the middle of the interview when it gets too hot and heavy. You know, just get up and bolt. Then, of course, we talked about this, but the behavior problem, children, that's another distinct presentation group. And then there's this teenage group which comes in, you know, with the borderline personality or something similar to that. Sometimes they're diagnosed as bipolar or, you know, something else other than borderline, but the same characteristics: dramatic, excitable, distraught teenagers, beside themselves with fear, grief, intense mood swings, you know, hilarity, follow, you know, mm-hmm. and then the next day suicidal, you know, very intense mood swings, despair followed by anger, shrieking, laughter, and sometimes abusiveness and self-harm. So those are the major presentations. I'm just going to say a few things about the mentals that I may not have covered already. I think I covered most of these points. Sudden explosive temper and tantrums and anger. That can be worse from fever, by the way, or from heat. Yeah. They're in a hot room. They sometimes will get very agitated and angry. Mm-hmm. Violent, delirium, mania, psychosis with violence, especially biting, was the number one. And it is the remedy, has the most prominent biting of every remedy in the Materia Medica. Biting other people or biting themselves, just pulling their hand up and biting it. Yeah. Striking and cursing were also very strong. It's not listed so strongly for cursing, but it was very strong. Wildness, behavior, the self-injury I mentioned, the screaming, from anger, frustration, from fright, shrieking in fright, from pain during fever, growling or making animal noises. You could easily see that you might confuse belladonna with an animal remedy. Mm-hmm. So they'll actually growl. Fear and terror about attacks, especially night terrors. Another thing which is very prominent in this remedy is hallucination. That's we all know that from materia medica, but especially the even the slightest fever is likely to cause hallucination in belladonna patients. They see books moving, animals jumping around, I mean, all sorts of hallucinations. They're not always afraid of, sometimes they enjoy their hallucinations. Even strong emotions can cause hallucinations. Then the attempt to escape, they can be very obstinate. Belladonna can be very, you know, it's the acute of calcarea, but they just will not give in. And they often describe themselves as shy, or their family describes them as shy, but it's a different kind of shy than what we usually see. It's a shy where you're scoping out the person that's in the room to make sure that they're not actually a demon disguised as a human being, that kind of shy. Mm-hmm. So it has this paranoid feeling to it as much as, but it's often, it was often described as shy, but I think it's sort of a misnomer. Abnormal laughter and smiling, jesting, like we said, biting the fingernails. 6 of the cases were suicidal. You don't think of belladonna as being suicidal. 6 of the cases were suicidal. Dancing, they love dancing. A large number, I think almost 12 of the cases were fascinated by dancing. And they fear and also love horror movies. Many belladonna patients cannot look at a horror movie, forget it. Others, all they do every day, they come home from school and put on horror movies. That's vampires and werewolves and things like that, because that they feel the werewolf inside them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
And they're either terrified of it or fascinated by it, one or the other.
Wow.
And then we talked about the fears, attacks, dogs, dark, being alone were the strongest. That's the main mental states. And then I think many of the physical symptoms were accurately described in our textbooks, the sudden onset. Don't expect to see the 3 p.m. aggravation that much. It was only in 5 of the cases.
Oh, wow.
Out of, you know, 100 historic cases, 15 modern acute cases, you know, 20 case reports, and close to 50, 4 or 5 cases had the 3 p.m. aggravation. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't strong, but it was there. The vast majority were warm-blooded.
Mm-hmm.
They can be chilly, but most were warm-blooded. The right-sided complaints was definitely confirmed in this group of patients by far. Aggravation from hormonal changes, that was super strong. Aggravation from jarring, from motion. The pains are almost always better from pressure. That came through very, very strongly. Mm-hmm. I put that as a keynote, pain ameliorated from pressure. Hot flushes, intense heat or flushes in a single part, big remedy for high blood pressure. As I said, the strongest food cravings, of course, sweets comes up for many remedies. That was numerically the number one craving. Number two craving was fish.
Just
remember, craving fish for belladonna. Lemons or lemonade, then milk, then oranges and orange juice, and then finally other dairy products like yogurt, sour cream, ice cream, all very strong. Now, we know belladonna is a thirstless remedy. Actually, it's a very thirsty remedy, and often extremely so. by far, mm-hmm. like three times the number of patients were thirsty than were thirstless. So those are the generals, and that's pretty much, I mean, the physical symptoms correspond almost exactly with what we know from our textbooks. And then the comparisons, remedies to keep in mind that you, that, so when I say, I'm not saying this theoretically, I'm saying in these cases, these patients will misprescribe the following remedies mm-hmm. first before they got belladonna. So most common was stramonium that was misprescribed for belladonna. Next was apis. Right-sided, heat.
Yeah.
Ovarian cysts, you know, right-sided ovarian cysts, flushes, anger, mm-hmm. you know, the extreme mm-hmm. anger that we talked about, restlessness that we talked about. So apis was the number two. Then veratrum tarantula was misprescribed, which you can understand, and aconite. And then in acutes, bryonia.
Mm-hmm. Also right-sided.
Also more right.
Yeah.
It's more often right side. Bryonia is kind of right and left. And lachesis, even though it's, you know, the left-sidedness, but the jealousy, the mania, the loquacity, fear of snakes, hypertension, aggravation from hormonal disorders and before menses.
And the forcefulness of the state.
Say again?
The forcefulness of the state.
The forcefulness of the state, that sense of like something. But in belladonna, you get the feeling that the forcefulness is from their own internal primitive side of their central nervous system coming out. Whereas with lachesis, what's the force is by competition, jealousy, mm-hmm. and egotism. So it's a much more elaborate mm-hmm. mental state in lachesis than in belladonna.
You okay, Nancy?
I got a tickle.
So
are we actually almost done?
Yeah, we are just about at time. I just, you know, I wish this could just go on and on. Maybe we can continue next time. We have a couple of quick question.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, go ahead.
That's okay, don't apologize because this is fascinating. We love it.
I wanted to do a couple belladonna cases, then we wanted to go into some other cases.
But
let's do that next time.
Okay, we should extend it. Okay, we'll extend it one more time.
Yeah, let's just keep the roll going. So there were a couple of questions. In your process doing all this, were you also able to confirm physiological affinities, like belladonna is supposed to have an affinity for tubular organs, like, you know, the fallopian tubes, the throat, the ear canals, the whatever, or the connection between remedies, belladonna and calcarea?
You know, yes, about the physiologic things, which you'll see when you read, you know, there's a lot about these tubular organs, yes. But inflammation is just so strong in belladonna. Almost every nook and cranny comes in for trouble. Other than calcarea, I was not able to confirm any of the listed remedies that follow well but most of these cases did so well with belladonna, they didn't go to other.
You need a follow on.
Wow. Especially the children and the teenagers. It was like belladonna was all she wrote by that point. There wasn't anything under it. Yeah. In the adults, I believe we've seen much more of the calcarea, but we haven't seen some of the other complementaries.
Mm-hmm. So Stacy has a question. She says, are there belladonna people who you see where you see in the case they are thinking about violent things but not acting on them?
They often do not. They often withhold their impulses. So a lot of times it's not thinking, though. It's an impulse. They have an impulse to violence, but it's not like they're thinking, I'd like to, you know, kill those. They get an impulse to kill that person, but they don't have a thought about killing that person.
Yeah, it's too primal.
It's primal, mm-hmm. Yeah. But they, of course, they learn, especially as they become older, they learn that they can't give in to those impulses, and they work extremely hard to avoid it.
Yeah, because they've probably lived with, by that time, you know, decades of ill effects of those impulses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as I said, many of these cases had been treated with abuse. And of course, they want to avoid doing that to other people. There's an inner sweetness a lot of times in Belladonna, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's another question. You had talked about the misperceived as, you know, we all learn remedies through the wrong ones that we give first. Mm-hmm. Did you see nitric acid?
No, not once.
Okay.
But you would think of that there could be some connection. You know, there are symptoms in common, but no, none of them, because nitric acid is such a intensely thinking, you know, that they think about their whatever it is a lot. Belladonna is so fresh. Everything is coming right off the press with Belladonna. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. All right. Well, this is fantastic. Thank you so much. We'll carry on next time. I'm really grateful for all the work that you're doing on behalf of all of us. And I love how organic your process is. Mm-hmm. And by all of us looking at that, it inspires us to see our best teachers are the people who got better.
Yes. And
all of us can go back and look at our own cases, our published cases, and do that deep work to contribute.
Absolutely. And share cases. Yeah. I'm actively soliciting cases from everyone I know. You know, if you have a really good case, send it to me.
Oh, great. We will make sure that can happen.
Yeah, preferably legible.
Yeah, but I can read illegible cases because I can read all of Nancy's cases.
Guys, well, thank you so much. We'll look forward to the next session, which will be the first Thursday in April.
Yes,
we'll go ahead and post this, and I'll send you the link, Nancy.
Okay. All right.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Take good care,
guys. Okay.
Bye-bye.